Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is all of it. The Oscar nominations came out this week, and in just a few minutes, we'll discuss some of the more notable nominations with A.O. Scott of the New York Times. But first, we'll hear about one of this week's nominees from the filmmakers behind the now Oscar-nominated documentary Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution. The film starts with the story of Camp Jenned, which flourished in the 60s and 70s and was designed for campers with a range of disabilities. Documentary filmmaker James Lebrecht went to Camp Jenned when he was a teenager and recalls it being kind of a paradise for kids who at the time were otherwise relegated to the margins of society. James uses a wheelchair. Campers engaged in the usual camp activities like swimming and sports, summer romances, and watching the film, one is forced to ask why the kind of accessibility and acceptance the kids found at this camp wasn't available to them elsewhere. The film then turns to telling the story of how many former campers and counselors, including prominent disability rights activist Judy Heumann, went on to become leaders of the disability rights movement, which demanded equal protection under the law for people with disabilities. James Lebrecht joined forces with another filmmaker, Nicole Noonan, to direct the film, was premiered at Sundance and was executive produced by the Obama's Higher Ground Production Company and is available to stream on Netflix. We spoke to the filmmakers when the movie premiered almost exactly a year ago at Sundance, and I started by the interview by asking James Lebrecht about the film's title, Crip Camp, a phrase which might be jarring to some.
It's kind of part of the nomenclature of a lot of the people that I know, and it basically is a way to kind of reclaim the word. You know, cripple has been a really horrible word thrown at us, and we started reclaiming that word and just using it as slang, and basically it kind of identifies the spirit of the film, that it's irreverent, that it's edgy, that it's not your mm-hmm. typical story around disability. And you know, certainly I remember Corbett, who's in the film, you know, asking me one day, hey, did you go to Crip Camp? And it's just that shorthand for, did you go to a summer camp for people with handicap?
Nicole, what spoke to you about this idea, about a documentary about this camp? Which is, I'm saying, is only part of the documentary, but we'll talk about the rest of it in a bit.
Yeah, well, you know, when Jim first brought it up to me, I think when he said I'd really like to see a film about the summer camp I went to, as a non-disabled person, I think I probably had a pretty stereotypical idea of what that was like and what the story was. And so when Jim started to describe the camp as this kind of hippie Valhalla and smoking dope with the counselors and music of the time and all this kind of joy and mayhem, and then I saw these fabulous photographs that he showed me that a counselor had taken, these beautiful black and white stills where you could just see the kind of joy and love of the disability community, because I think those campers at Camp Jenned did form a really powerful community. I realized that it just broke down a lot of stereotypes and kind of preconceived ideas that I was holding, because the kinds of ways that we see people with disabilities portrayed in the media usually fall into a couple of tropes, you know, sort of what people sometimes call inspiration porn. This, mm-hmm. You know, let the person with a disability inspire you by their heroic tale of overcoming, or sort of tragedy. And this was neither of those things. It was something completely new. And so I thought that would provide a really powerful window for looking at a history that's been really overlooked and neglected, frankly.
So, Nicole, when you were starting to research and think about the story arc here, what came first? Did the profile of the camp itself or the disability rights part of the story? Is it a chicken and egg, or did one lead to the other?
I think we were really focused on the camp initially, as Jim said, you know, and how could we bring that back to life, which was sort of a quest that led us to this extraordinary black and white video shot by the People's Video Theater, which is featured in the film. But as we started to research sort of Jim's idea that there was something about the camp that provoked people to want to move out to Berkeley in search of a better life, like they had found at the camp, this sort of recreate that utopia that they had experienced, you know, free of discrimination. Then we started to realize, wow, a lot of people from the camp actually were involved in the independent living movement in Berkeley. And then a lot of people actually got involved in this kind of epic takeover of a federal building in San Francisco that that pushed forward the first disability civil rights legislation. And so then we got really excited, you know, could we draw a line from kind of that spark of inspiration at the camp all the way through? And of course, Jeanette was only one site of, you know, of kind of where people with disabilities came together and found community that led to the disability rights movement, which our film only shows a slice of. But being able to trace that ripple effect from that profound experience of liberation became the structure that we started looking at.
In the documentary, one of the wonderful things about it is this idea that it doesn't shy away from sex or romance going on at the camp. And there's this sort of hilarious sidebar tangent about how the crabs were going around the camp at one point. Jim, why was it important to include these elements in this film?
Well, I think that's one of the stereotypes of people with disabilities. That is that we are asexual, or that we have no interest, or we're not capable of it. And indeed, that is so far from the truth, from personal experience and anecdotal experience, that you know, we're like anybody else. And certainly in my specific case, you know, my 15-year-old hormones were raging like anybody else's 15-year-old hormones. So it's important. I think one of the things that the film really shows is this inside view of disability, and that it's not somebody else explaining it to the viewer, but it is people like myself and Denise and Corbett talking about their life experiences, and that, you know, that includes the whole gamut of the human experience.
So, Jim and Nicole, either one, you can take this one. Judy Heumann is one of the counselors at the camp, and she goes on to be a pivotal figure in the fight for disability rights in America. Jim, I'm going to start with you. Could you tell back then that Judy was going to be a leader on this issue?
Well, very much so, I think. And first, just meeting her, she was such an incredibly dynamic person. And she's really the reason that I got involved with the disability rights movement, because I'm at camp and I know that Judy had prevailed in this lawsuit against the New York City Board of Education, who were refusing to give her a teaching position. And for the first time in my life, I realized, oh my gosh, we actually can fight back. People will listen to us. They will, you know, we can actually change the situation we're in. And, you know, that to me was so profound. And, you know, you just see it in the footage of this film, even the way she's trying to organize the dinner for the cook's night out was, you know, this incredible organizer just at the beginning of her career.
What did you think when you first encountered Judy Heumann?
Well, we went to film with Judy when she was working at the State Department, when we first started working on the film, which was a number of years ago now. And she was manning three different phones. She had a BlackBerry, she had two cell phones. And she was basically, you know, organizing people all over the world to fight for disability rights. She's one of the most funny, warm, down-to-earth people you've ever met, but at the same time, she's just such a force. She just, you know, she encountering her is like really mind-altering. And she became, I came to see that Judy Heumann is one of the great civil rights heroes of our time, you know. And I think Jim and I took an enormous amount of satisfaction in being able to spend years digging around, looking for little fragments of archival footage with our researchers and editors, and being able to piece together a trajectory that takes Judy all the way from, you know, a 23-year-old working as a counselor trying to wrangle the lasagna for the cook's night out, all the way to, you know, her powerful speaking as the ADA was being considered, and really showing how she truly did change the world. I think, you know, this film, it starts out funky at the camp, but it basically, you know, relates in some part one of the great civil rights struggles of our time. And we found in our research that, you know, the archival footage and a lot of the material had not been cataloged well or taken care of very well. And we felt like we could play a role in raising up the profile of Judy and her story, which we know anecdotally has inspired so many young activists who are on the front lines of doing work around disability rights today. And we hope that it inspires a lot more.
There's an incredibly moving moment in the film when Judy, and you see the fighter in her, but you also see some of the pain in her when she says, there's a win. And she says, I don't know why I should be grateful that I can have access to a bathroom. Like, why should I have to be grateful about that? That's just a basic kind of right. So, Jim, for people who maybe not, you know, really think about this in terms of our modern history, before the disability rights movement, what kind of protections and rights existed for disabled in America?
I think it was virtually nothing. You kind of got a sense that, well, this is your lot in life, and too bad for you, but it's your problem. And, it was really kind of a charity model for anything to help support people. I mean, there were certainly disabled civil rights movements and organizations that came before this movement in the 70s, but, I just never felt like, there was job discrimination, there was, and unemployment is still very high in the community. So there was nothing that I'm aware of.
Nicole, would you walk us through the events leading up to the 1977 sit-in at the Federal Department of Health, Education, and Welfare building in San Francisco? That's a big part of the film.
Well, it is a big part of the film. So basically, the 1973 Rehabilitation Act, DIA and Judy and some of those initial protests and meetings helped push Nixon to sign that bill. And that bill had a provision in it kind of buried in the bottom of the bill that said that anyone getting federal money couldn't discriminate against people with disabilities. And the language was actually drawn from the original Civil Rights Act in 1964 and kind of put in there because activists at the time knew that there was no way that a kind of general civil rights bill for people with disabilities like the ADA would pass. And so what happened, though, is that nobody enforced it. The regulations were never issued, and so the law could never be enforced. So it was basically meaningless. And Ford never did anything about it. And when Carter got elected, people with disabilities had really supported his candidacy, and they were waiting for the regulations to be issued. And the Health, Education, and Welfare Secretary didn't do that. And so basically it was a little bit of what in the edit room we called a Selma moment, where activists all over the country, and Judy was definitely one of them, felt like we can't wait anymore. They started to hear that lobbyists from hospitals and school organizations, et cetera, were coming in and saying, like, look, there's no way we're going to be able to spend all the money it's going to take to make, our buildings accessible. The Transportation Authority didn't want to pay to make the subways accessible, all of that stuff. And so so they felt like they had to act. And so Judy and Kitty Cohn and other activists in the Bay Area, and also activists in 11 cities, decided to stage takeovers and protests at the buildings of health, education, and welfare offices all over the country. And in the Bay Area, because there was such an incredibly networked group of different organizations, different civil rights organizations, Kitty Cohn and Judy were able to lead an effort that resulted in people not only kind of going into the building and taking it over, but staying there for 26 days.
That's amazing that they stayed in that building for that long. And there were definitely challenges in navigating that protest. How did they navigate the challenges of housing so many people with so many different challenges?
Well, there's certainly, I think one of the great things that Judy and Kitty and other folks like Ron Washington were good at was really being involved with other activist groups And probably the key thing was that the Black Panthers came in and provided food every day. They provided three meals a day for the people inside. And that was really, really probably one of the most critical things. But you know, there was support from the Butterfly Brigade. There was support from a lot of the unions. So I think that was really the key thing. We were able to get certain, supplies and medicine brought in, which, is really kind of a testament to the Bay Area and Mayor Moscone and everyone else that we had this ability to survive.
When you think about camp, this is one thing you said at the beginning, Nicole, drawing that line from that camp to the disability rights revolution. What is that direct line?
We talked about it as sort of the profound experience of freedom and that feeling that people had that life could be better. Jim said early on in our work on the film, he said, you don't have anything to fight for if you don't know that it exists. And it was that idea that people could have good lives. They could enjoy themselves. They could, express themselves kind of in the fullness of who they were. And that's what those teenagers experienced. And then that was such a motivating force for people to be able to go out and create a world that would allow them to live a chosen life like that. And so I think you see just that, going back to Judy Heumann, she just refuses to accept injustice, and she refuses to not call it out when she sees it or feels it. And so I think, you see a moment we trace in the film, even when she's in kindergarten and she's thinking about the oppression that she and her friends in her elementary school class are experiencing by being pushed into the basement and being the downstairs kids in special ed while the upstairs kids are upstairs. She has this thing where she gets really angry. She maybe even starts to cry, and then she controls herself, and then she pushes forward and fights for what's right. And you see her do that, kind of all the way through the film. So I think you see the power of that. You see the power of even a small, relatively small number of people just being inspired and deciding that they are not going to accept, second-class status in our society, and how that can really spark great change.
That was part of my conversation with filmmakers Nicole Newnham and James Lebrecht about co-directing the documentary Crip Camp, A Disability Revolution. Earlier this week, the film was nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary Feature.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.